Hello and welcome to the July 28th edition of Juneau Afternoon on KTOO in Juneau, Alaska. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. I'm your Thursday host, Joan Pardis, and we've got a great show. We're going to hear about the cabaret that's coming up this weekend and lots of other stuff. So stay tuned. We'll be back.
For National Native News, I'm Stephen Emmons, in for Antonia Gonzalez. As the Democratic National Convention heads into its final day, some Native American delegates are looking ahead to priorities for the new administration. Viola Nave St. Clair is a delegate from Fort Washakie, Wyoming. She's also the wife of Eastern Shoshone Chairman Darwin St. Clair. A longtime Hillary Clinton supporter, she says the top thing on her mind at the convention and to convey to future elected officials is for the federal government to uphold their promised responsibility.
Funding is a big issue. I mean, they need to fully fund tribes. The government, people like Senator Sanders and Senator Clinton when they're in those positions, and we need advocates in the executive office to help make sure that happens. Our IHS gets funded at, 55%, or 45%? Our roads and transportation are even less than that. We need that funding to help build up our infrastructure.
St. Clair gives credit to President Bill Clinton for setting the foundation for the White House Tribal Nations Conference. She praises President Barack Obama for helping the forum thrive to give Native nations a voice with top federal officials. Although St. Clair says she's been involved in politics for many years, this is her first national convention. She turned to the fundraising site GoFundMe to help pay for the trip to Philadelphia. St. Clair is one of several Native Americans represented at the convention. At least 9 Northwestern tribes make up a 16-member caucus that aims to highlight their political priorities at the convention. Julie Johnson, a member of the Lummi tribe in Western Washington, is the caucus chair.
There's just so many issues. There's fishing issues, treaty rights, sovereignty issues.
The group decided to focus on 4 key areas when they started the caucus over a year ago: health, education, economic development, and natural resources.
I strongly believe that Native people have to be at the table on voting, for what our priorities are.
Johnson says she doesn't know of any organized groups representing Native Americans at last week's Republican National Convention in Cleveland. Thursday's speakers at the Democratic Convention include Minnesota legislator Peggy Flanagan, a member of the White Earth Band of Ojibwe. The Yankton Sioux tribe says they are shocked and outraged by the Army Corps of Engineers' permit approvals for the Dakota Access Oil Pipeline. Tribal officials say the government failed to enter into formal consultation with the tribe that's required by federal law. The written release calls the project unlawful. The tribe maintains the pipeline threatens untold numbers of burials and cultural sites. The Army Corps approved crossings at the Mississippi River and several other locations, clearing much of the way for the nearly 1,200-mile pipeline proposed by Dallas-based Energy Transfer Partners. The nearly $4 billion project runs from North Dakota to Illinois. The Standing Rock Sioux is another tribe opposing the project. Participants at a protest spirit camp on the Standing Rock Reservation say they will continue to resist the pipeline construction. The U.S. Justice Department is pursuing a warrant to retrieve a sacred Acoma Pueblo shield that surfaced at an auction at the Eve Auction House this past May. The auction house pulled the shield from the sale after complaints from Acoma officials in New Mexico that the shield was illegally taken from its rightful place and sold on the black market. The auction went ahead for dozens of other items despite protests from many federal and tribal officials. The U.S. Attorney for New Mexico filed a civil action to retrieve the shield, saying its sale violates the Archaeological Resources Protection Act because it's over 100 years old and was removed without permission. Actor, musician, World War II veteran, and Lakota chief David Beautiful Bald Eagle will be laid to rest Friday. He died last week on the Cheyenne River Indian Reservation at age 97. National Public Radio notes Bald Eagle was discharged from the Army the day Pearl Harbor was bombed. When he heard the news, he reenlisted. After the war, he was a competitive ballroom dancer and rodeo rider before turning to acting. He appeared in films with Errol Flynn and Marilyn Monroe. He also appeared in the Oscar-winning film Dances with Wolves. He was the face of South Dakota tourism promotions for many years. The Black Hills Pioneer reports Bald Eagle was a prominent participant in Deadwood's Days of 76 celebration for more than 70 years. For National Native News, I'm Stephen Emmons.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Support by the National Museum of the American Indian, presenting the 2016 Native Cinema Showcase August 16th to the 21st in Santa Fe, New Mexico, the week of Indian Market. Information at americanindian.si.edu. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It is 5 minutes past the hour, and you're listening to Juno Afternoon from KTOO, and here is the weather. It is not raining right now. So that is like really, really big news. If you're from Juneau, you know what I'm talking about. The rest of today, numerous rain showers, high in the mid-60s, southeast winds to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, numerous rain showers, lows around 50, southeast winds to 10 miles per hour. Friday and Friday night, numerous rain showers. And here, drum roll please, Saturday, partly sunny. Highs in the mid-60s. So if you have a coffee break, if you have a few minutes, you might want to go outside because there's no liquid sunshine at the moment. So here we are, July 28th. It is Juno Afternoon. Jeff Brown's at the board. He's the producer and engineer of the show. I'm Joan Partis, your Thursday host. And our first guests today are people from the Juno Cabaret. We have Heather Mitchell and Tom Loker. Tom Loker is the musical director of the Juno Cabaret. We're going to talk a little bit about its history and what it is, and there's an event this Sunday, so you can learn a little and then go see it live. So welcome to the show, guys.
Hi, Joan. Thanks for having us on the air again.
Oh, it's great. So let's talk a little bit about the Juno Cabaret. I've heard about it. I've been to a few, but it's like its own little niche group here, isn't
it? Right. We got our start in 2009, me and some other volunteer accompanists. And then we've had a steady supply of singers come through Juno Cabaret. And as I said, we had our start in 2009, August. So we're coming up on 8 years. We've had at least a couple dozen shows, approaching about 30. And we started out small, and we've been in the Rockwell Ballroom for the last few years. And we have the show about every 8 weeks. Singers can sign up at junocabaret.net. They need to line up a piano accompanist. I can help them do that. And each singer performs two songs. Heather's one of our perennial favorites, the Juno Cabaret. So tell them a little bit about what it's like to be a singer in the show, Heather.
Great. Thanks, Tom. Yeah, one of the nicest things about Juno Cabaret, in addition to having an opportunity to sing songs from the Great American Songbook, and these are going to be songs that are written and produced either in Broadway or in movies anywhere from the 20s through the 50s, I mean, these are songs you know and multi-generationally, we all know, and to have an opportunity to be able to learn them and sing them or sing them again is really nice. What I particularly think is nice about Juno Cabaret, and it's something that I want every, you know, singer out there, every shower singer, everybody who's watching the kids and has that one song they want to sing, is that this is a great venue for people in various stages of their musical life. I have lots of friends who are wonderful musicians. They're very busy either with their jobs or with their children, and the idea of being in a large production, maybe a theatrical production, which would involve a lot of rehearsal time, it's just not where they're at right now. So for us, we go ahead and we do not a whole lot of rehearsal, 3 or 4, depending upon your kind of your comfort level with your accompanist, put together your two songs, and then you can come sing these at the cabaret and then get to enjoy every other singer. So it's a really great way if you don't have lots of time. It's a great way to get back into singing. If you haven't done it in a while, it's a very low-risk proposition to work with songs that everyone loves and only have to learn and practice two of them. And it's a great venue for new singers. You know, I've got both my kids sing. I've got my son's 14. Pretty soon he'll be 15 and will be old enough to sing in our cabarets. He's already starting to work on these songs. But he, again, might only feel comfortable working on two songs to throw out of the gate right at the beginning. And so I think that that's one of the best things, sort of the best built-in flexibility to our particular event, and it's very laid back, and we have a wonderful house. The crowd we draw is so appreciative of everything we're trying to do up there, both for the beginning singer and for the veteran singer that might be somebody that they really, really like. I've had people come up and say, I love it when you do this kind of thing. Hey, let me know when you're going to do another kind of song like that. I really enjoyed it. So, you know, it's just wonderful. It's a really wonderful experience for singers.
Wow. If you're just joining us, that's Heather Mitchell. She's one of nine singers that are going to perform at the Juno Cabaret this Sunday at 7 p.m. at the Rockwell Ballroom. Now, the Rockwell Ballroom, how many people does that hold? How many people are you attracting on an eight-week basis? It's kind of amazing that you do this every other month.
Our audience has been very supportive. We've had audiences range in size from 60 to 160 people. I would say on average it's about 100 people come in there.
Yeah.
The ballroom would actually hold more, but that's a very comfortable number in there. This is the old Elks Hall, everybody, the upstairs 109 South Franklin that used to be the territorial legislature's meeting place, and then the Elks Hall Purple Bubble Room for a long time, and now the Rockwell Ballroom. And it's a great, great room for a singing show. And we have found that that combination, piano accompanist, singer out front, and we do use a drummer on a lot of the numbers also, has been the right combination for that room and that audience. And the audience is very supportive.
Okay, I have lots of questions here. So this happened and started happening in 2009, you said.
Correct.
So I want to hear the process of like, hey, let's start a cabaret. And then there's that, you know, like, hey, let's put on a show. That thing. And then I also want to talk about the meaning of a cabaret. So while we all may have our own idea of what a cabaret is, and yes, Liza Minnelli does pop into view, but I'm just saying, what is a cabaret, and why did you name it such, and so on and so forth?
Okay, well, the origin of the show is there's a great cabaret singer in town, a guy named John Haywood, who's also plays saxophone in the big band, and he's a great jazz singer also. He's done every workshop. And his spouse is a monster arts administrator. She's the executive director of the Juno Symphony right now, and she's done a lot of other things with small town arts productions. And she's a great web designer and all this. So she got the idea, let's have a little local cabaret, Juno Cabaret. We'll try it quarterly and get a few singers and volunteer accompanists to just throw this together, a couple of songs each. And she was our producer for the first 7 years and did a great job organizing that, getting publicity and posters together and finding places to have it. And we tried to focus on Great American Songbook, which, as Heather said, is a collection of songs written between about 1920 and 1960 from Broadway musicals and movies, and also the Hit Parade, what came before American Top 40.
Mm-hmm.
And the singers choose that. And we ask singers to have one of their numbers be from Great American Songbook. The other number can be almost anything. So we've had a great variety of pop songs performed and, you know, things that are outside the comfort zone of the singer. They like to try something new. Sometimes an opera singer will do a jazz song. Jazz singer will do a cabaret piece. And by cabaret, we mean an intimate connection with the audience, where it's just the singer, piano accompanist, sometimes a drummer playing brushes in the back, but not a big instrumental production, sort of a scaled-back instrumental production. It's about the singer connecting with the audience on an intimate level and being able to communicate the lyric to them. We try and make it quiet enough so that all the lyrics can be heard, for example, which is rare in a live music setting, often rare. Like in, you don't get that in a bar band, for example, where everybody's up dancing.
Yeah, so, exactly.
Yeah.
That is so interesting. So I've been to cabarets, but I've never really heard it described as such. So that's really interesting that it's the intimate connection between the singer and the audience.
It's a truly, I wouldn't say uniquely American art form, but it's a truly American art form in that it's still practiced here in the United States, and it's sort of faded away other places. But its origins are around the pre-war period. You know,
okay.
Yeah.
So for argument's sake, can you tell me like some of the iconic cabaret songs?
Songs and composers, I'd say, from the Great American Songbook, it's those composers, George and Ira Gershwin and Cole Porter, Jerome Kern and Harry Warren, and a lot of those, I said Cole Porter, didn't
I? Yes, you did.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So a lot of those songs, they become the mother songs of the Great American Songbook, and then everything that comes after is sort of a daughter song. You know, it's based on the chord changes from some of those earlier pieces. And later on, we had other composers like Van Heusen and Burke and Burt Bacharach, and, you know, I could go on and on.
Okay. But can you name, like, songs?
Yes, yes. One of the songs we've had performed a lot in Juno Cabaret, and it's kind of overdone, is called They Can't Take That Away From Me by the Gershwins.
Mm-hmm.
So, but every time that someone chooses that, if I work with them, we try and restyle it a new way, try and breathe some new life into these old standards. And another thing is we'll take an old ballad and turn it into a bossa nova, or an old song and turn it into a jazz waltz, or mix up the styles.
Mm-hmm. And what is a bossa nova?
A bossa nova has a different sort of bass line that doesn't travel in swing time.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of the other jazz songs are more with a four feel, like a jazz feel.
Okay. Yeah. All right, so now we're going to go dig back a little bit more. So, Tom, what's your background? Like, you're a well-known musician in town. you play piano in a variety of different settings.
Yeah.
So what's your background?
I'm from Juneau, and, you know, my motto is bloom while you're planted. So I first started studying music at about age 4 and a half, piano lessons at home, and then later on I got into the Harborview School band program, and then I learned guitar, and then I played my first garage band, and on. But dinner piano, I guess, pretty steady for about the last 30 years. I've played at a lot of hotel restaurants, and I learned a lot of standards doing that, taking requests from white-haired tourists, you know. And then I started having fun accompanying singers about 20 years ago, and then regularly for about the last 15, like a lot. So,
okay. All right. So let's talk about what accompanying this does. So you know, musical numbers and musical theater and musical performances have had a, I would say a revival in pop culture. Okay. So for things like Glee and Smash and television shows that are usually successful that have musical numbers in them, and then also all the competitive voice, so on and so forth, reality shows. So an accompanist doesn't just take a sheet music and just plays for the performer. Is that correct or not incorrect?
Right.
That was a question, actually. Like, does a pianist, does an accompanist just take something off the shelf and say, okay, I want to sing, you know, you can't take it away from me, and here we go.
Most accompanists that do the cabaret art form or the jazz art form are not working with commercially available sheet music, because that's designed for piano students. But it can be a good start to build an arrangement. And what we have to do is arrange at the keyboard with the singer there. So I usually break it up into three meetings for Juno Cabaret. The first is a quick meeting to talk about songs and styles and get to know the singer's range a little bit and what they want to do, what they want to sing. Then the second meeting is to build those arrangements, talk about the right key for the singer, something that's not too high or too low and can come out conversational. You know, when the singer sings those lyrics, they have to be conversational and touch the audience that way. And then build an arrangement in the right tempo with the right kinds of styles behind the singing to convey whatever message or speed or urgency. It's, you know, music is all about tension and release, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. And that's the second meeting. Then the third meeting, we just do a run through until we both believe it, until it's believable to both of us.
And you know, my perspective from the singers is, you know, and I work with Tom most of the time, so I can, when I speak about my accompanist, I'm talking about Tom. You know, Tom is very much like your partner when you're dancing. He makes you look good. You know, so you start it, and he'll do everything possible to make you look good. And then when you're performing, he keeps you out of trouble. So if you start to veer off, that accompanist keeps you on the right track. And so
I have to put in a huge plug for David Shakely, the drummer, the drummer who's been playing brushes at Juno Cabaret for at least the last 25 shows. Extremely sensitive listener, knows hundreds of American songbook songs and likes them, you know. He will always hold you and help build the ending, even having never rehearsed the song, or get somebody in or out of a situation so that it resolves clean, you know, and it sounds like it was rehearsed and intended to be that way. And
And when you talk about brushes, what are you talking about?
Instead of sticks on the drums, uh-huh. David will use brushes or a uh-huh. shaker or whatever is needed. It's like he'll use a shaker in the bossa nova pieces with one hand and then
right.
play a rim shot with the other, like a stick on the edge of the snare drum.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I assume that, but you know, sometimes mm-hmm. you make the wrong assumption.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
it's the drumming that's atmospheric, you know,
right,
that it's
right.
creating
and,
an atmosphere.
And he can build a lot of color. And if he knows mm-hmm. the song, he can play, you know, brush hits on the same place as the lyrics fall. And it sounds like it's meant to be there. So it's a great thing to have him as part of Juno Cabaret every show.
Yeah, we're very lucky.
Yeah.
That's great. So if you're just joining us, we're talking about the Juno Cabaret, its history, and its happening event this Sunday, the 31st at 7 p.m. at the Rockwell Ballroom. And before we get into the singers and so on and so forth, so it seems like, you know, it happens every 8 weeks. People could sign up. There's a website, junocabaret.net. But, Heather, let's talk about your evolution as far as the singers. So you said, you know, that there's a wide range of people that the Juno Cabaret could support, give opportunities, shower singers, people who can't make a big commitment to a huge production. It's just an intimate arrangement with a accompanist partner to get those songs ready. So tell us about your first experience and then talk us through maybe your last or one of your best experiences.
Okay. Well, one of the things that, you know, in terms of me historically, I hadn't spent a lot of time singing. There was a big, big chunk of time from the time I left high school to when I started singing again. It's just there wasn't any real singing that I did when I was having my children and getting them to an age where I could leave the house, that kind of stuff. But when I was in high school, I used to sing. I was in my high school, it was the first time they decided to use a vocalist with a jazz band. And so I got introduced to a lot of jazz standards and Great American Songbook standards, and I really enjoyed that idea. You know, you can picture a 40s venue, and you have your band, and you have everybody out there at their tables with their elegant drinks and their elegant outfits, and really kind of enjoying the whole experience. So when we got to getting, I think I was asked to sing a duet with somebody, and I had just done some other stuff. Finally kind of gotten back into singing. So I was not sure that, you know, I was like, sure you want me? I don't know, you know, I haven't done a lot of this stuff. And so we went ahead and we ended up doing a Broadway duet. And
she was so good, Joan. They did something from Wicked.
We did something from Wicked.
Okay.
And we
which
have
song?
It was
What Is This Feeling?
What Is This Feeling?
I mm-hmm. was the
yep.
Yeah.
And so it was really fun. And then I went ahead and did another song. I think it was a Cole Porter song at the time. And then all of a sudden I started thinking about, oh, this would be a good song to sing. And oh, I should. And so then it was in the car and in the shower practicing all this stuff. So over periods of time, I would just work on songs. And then I would say to Tom, I've been kind of working on this song for about the last six months. You think, you know, we could do this in one of these? And at the time, I wasn't on any kind of regular rotation, but we would get together, and he'd say, yeah, that's good, that's good. And so we started to build these up, and I think Everything Must Change was probably the best song I've ever done.
You sang it very well.
I'm not sure, but that's actually not an American Songbook. It's a 70s song written by, I think, Quincy Jones, and it was recorded in the 70s, and then it was re-recorded by Aletta Adams, a singer I like a lot from the 90s. And so that's one. I tend to do my jazz standard or I do my Great American Songbook standard, and then I follow it up with something that's sort of bluesy and soulful, and they'll usually be 60s or 70s songs. So I've done Ain't No Sunshine for stuff. I have done Sam Cooke stuff.
She's a belter.
You know, so I like.
I've never seen you perform, but that sounds like you're a belter.
Yeah. I like to have a little fun with that kind of stuff. So that's my, you know, where he said sometimes you'll pick one that's on the straight and narrow. But then I've done lots of Cole Porter. I've done lots of, I think I've done some Warren.
Yes.
And
Heather's open to restyling songs.
Yes.
And breathing new life into old standards. You know, we did some Cole Porter cover recently as a samba cover, which is
mm-hmm.
very few singers
from this moment on
pick
mm-hmm.
that, you know, and she sang it very well, and it was a real nice, added some nice variety to the show. And that's what a lot of these singers bring. she was talking about earlier, we have returning singers, veteran singers, developing singers, people who've just been on a little bit of a hiatus and they need to break back in, and two songs is a good way to come mm-hmm. back into singing.
Yeah, and the fun thing about once you've gotten enough songs, you know, Tom and I have worked together enough now where we've got a pretty decent stable of songs that we can pull stuff out when we need it. But then it's also nice, I will say to him, okay, how's our show looking? How many of these do you have? How many? And I can say, okay, it sounds like, you know, maybe what if I do this or this to help round out what the other singers are doing so that we've got a nice kind of diverse show. It's nice to know I can kind of be utility when needed.
That's great. All right, before we get into who's singing and so on and so forth this Sunday at 7 o'clock at the Rockwell, so is this a family event? Is this 21 and over? Is it?
Everyone is welcome. It's pay as you can. We'll have an under 21 section for those people who are not accompanied by a parent or guardian.
Mm-hmm.
So we love it that we always have some younger singers in the show and all of their friends can come. Mm-hmm. And because it's pay as you can, even if they don't have any money that day, there's no admission ticket to buy. They can still come in and enjoy.
That sounds great. Okay, so who are your singers?
This coming Sunday, we have great vocalists. I'm accompanying four of them. Heather, who's here in the studio with us. Christina Pollock. A brand new singer to town named Latoya Sharon. Her husband's in the Coast Guard, and they moved here recently, staying a year. And then a great singer named Zebediah Bodine, who's a young man from Douglas, and he just was a featured principal in Sweeney Todd at Perseverance. So he's a great singer.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be great to have him there. And then other accompanists are working with Becky Baer and Patricia Hull, Kylan McKeer, and Bobby Mitchell. And it'll be great to have them singing in the show too. And I think we may have some people on the wait list who move up because we've had a couple of people have to bow out for travel reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And we always have people on the wait list who want to be in Juno Cabaret, so.
Okay. Yeah, we never have a show where we don't have several people on the wait list.
Yeah.
Okay. In addition to our stable, so it's nice.
So you heard it here. You can sign up.
JunoCabaret.net.
JunoCabaret.net. It's time to hit the stage.
Yeah.
So Heather, what's your songs? Can we talk about that?
Okay? I'm keeping it a secret from my parents, but I think they're busy watching my kids right now, so I don't think they're going to hear this, so it's okay. I'm going to be singing. I'm going to sing Summer Samba. So nice. So since it's the summer, we'll have to think back to when it was so nice while I'm singing it. So we'll have a samba. And then my second one is Since I Fell for You. So a Lenny Welch song from the, I don't know, was it late 50s or early 60s?
In there,
Again, with my treatment, it'll be a little bit different than Lenny Welch did it. So.
Okay. All right. Well, before you leave, I have one more question.
Joan, your questions are great. This has been so much fun.
All right.
Well,
here's one that, I kind of ask the questions that people think and that don't really say. So how does one become a singer? Like, you know, so you like to sing,
mm-hmm.
and maybe you're off key. Okay, maybe I'm talking about myself. Maybe you've never had a singing lesson in your life, mm-hmm. but you love to belt out the show tunes, but you know you really can't sing. So how does one learn how to sing?
My advice, record yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Record yourself and listen to the recordings, and you will get better, I think. If you know, and then if you get brave enough, play recordings for other singers or vocal teachers and get their feedback. Because every singer brings a different bag of tricks. I've had some singers come who've done choral singing their whole life.
Mm-hmm.
They can sing every note exactly right along with the piano. But it's really hard for them to forward phrase or back phrase or try a blue run.
What does forward phrase or back phrase
mean? Singing before the one in the measure, or singing after the one in the measure, moving the note a little bit to give it a more of a swing feel.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then also to scoop in or out of a note to sing on.
Get to use all your bad habits.
Yeah, yeah. to let your diction suffer a little bit so the interpretation of the lyric sounds a little more jazzy. And so some singers bring great skill set with choral training, but they don't have any freedom to improvise. And then others are great improvisers, but they need a little more grounding in their fundamentals to get to be a good singer. And again, I say record yourself.
Yeah. training your ear. I mean, you have to be able to hear what you're doing, and sometimes you can't do it at the same time you're singing. So listening to it, working in small groups, and working with somebody who can coach you a little bit to just work on a few. There's just a few fundamental concepts of forming sounds and using your breath, and everything else is just practice. Okay. That's what the shower's for.
And it's good when you're out on the trail by yourself.
Yeah. It is, and the acoustics in most cars are very good.
So that's why there's all that car singing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's the acoustics.
Yep.
Who knew? All right. Well, thank you, Tom Loker and Heather Mitchell, for coming by today to talk about the Juno Cabaret, which is happening Sunday at 7 p.m. It's pay as you can. Kids are welcome. They have their only own little section.
Yep.
If they don't come with an adult over 21, you can find out more at JunoCabaret.net, right. And they're also on Facebook.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for what you do for singers in our community, our art community.
Our pleasure. Yeah. Absolutely our pleasure.
All right. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back.
Thanks, Joan. Thanks, Jeff.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, the 28th of July, 2016. It's the birthday of the poet John Ashbery, born in Rochester, New York, 1927, grew up on his family's fruit farm near Lake Ontario, went to a small rural school. He was a bright young man, and a generous neighbor, seeing that, paid to send him to a good school for his last 2 years of high school, and he started writing poetry. Went on to Harvard, published his first book when he was 29, a book entitled Some Trees. John Ashbery, who said, "I don't quite understand about understanding poetry. I experience poems with pleasure, whether I understand them or not. I'm not quite sure. I don't want to read something I already know, or which is going to slide down easily. There has to be some crunch, a certain amount of resilience." John Ashbery, who wrote in his poem At North Farm, "Somewhere, someone is traveling furiously toward you, at incredible speed, traveling day and night, through blizzards and desert heat, across torrents, through narrow passes. But will he know where to find you, recognize you when he sees you, give you the thing he has for you?" It's the birthday of the poet Gerard Manley Hopkins, born in Stratford near London, 1844, went to a fancy boarding school, wrote poems, he was a painter, went on to Oxford to study the classics. And while he was there, he had a religious conversion. His parents were Anglicans, but the young Hopkins decided to become a Catholic, inspired by John Henry Newman, whose book Apologia Pro Vita Sua was a bestseller while Hopkins was at Oxford. 2 years later, Hopkins decided to become a Jesuit priest, and he began his training. He burned all of his poems, said he was giving up poetry, didn't write at all for 7 years until 1875, when a German passenger ship, the SS Deutschland, sank in a storm. 75 passengers died, including 5 Franciscan nuns who were escaping harsh anti-Catholic laws, and he wrote a long poem, The Wreck of the Deutschland. And now that he saw poetry as a way to express his faith, he started writing again. In the year he was ordained as a priest, 1877, he wrote some of his best-known poems, including The Windhover, As Kingfishers Catch Fire, Dragonflies Draw Flame. And he wrote God's Grandeur, the famous poem that begins, "The world is charged with the grandeur of God." He went through desperate hard times as a priest, was sent to Dublin, which he hated. He became very depressed, doubted his own religious faith, even contemplated suicide. Died of typhoid fever at the age of 44. During his lifetime, he had published only a handful of poems. Here's a poem for today by Mary Oliver, How It Begins. A puppy is a puppy is a puppy. He's probably in a basket with a bunch of other puppies. Then he's a little older, and he's nothing but a bundle of longing. He doesn't even understand it. Then someone picks him up and says, I want this one. How It Begins, a poem by Mary Oliver from Dog Songs, published by the Penguin Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Progressive Insurance, working to make progress for more than 75 years. And by the Poetry Foundation, you can subscribe to the Poetry Magazine podcast and the Poetry Off the Shelf podcast in the iTunes store or listen at poetryfoundation.org. Be well, do good work, keep in touch.
Programming is made possible in part by Juno's Own Alaska Pure Mountain Spring Water, available in Juno stores or delivered in 5-gallon jugs to homes and offices. 780-4262.
It is 24 minutes to the hour. You're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO. So here we have from CBJ Docks and Harbors, they'd like to encourage all vessel owners to check your vessel during stormy weather, which we're expecting numerous rain showers for the next 2 days. Please make sure that your lines are secure, pumps are operating correctly, and your boat is not collecting rainwater. Also, here's another announcement from CBJ. The Southeast Roadrunners Frank Meyer Marathon is happening in the Douglas Island Half Marathon this Saturday. So Savico Park will be in use from 6 a.m. to 12 p.m. this Saturday, July 30th, for the Southeast Roadrunners Frank Meyer Marathon and Douglas Island Half Marathon. Okay, the park will remain open to the public during the race, but that is happening this Saturday. Okay, right now it is 66 at the airport, 61 downtown and in the valley, and 61 in Douglas. And now we're going to listen to an excerpt from the April Mudrooms. That's a storytelling event that happens, I think, just about every month. And this is from none other than Governor Bill Walker.
Governor Bill Walker was born in Fairbanks and raised in Delta Junction in Valdez. His parents, Ed and Frances Walker, were Alaskan pioneers. As a family, the Walkers celebrated Alaska statehood in 1959, survived the 1964 earthquake, and worked together in the family construction and hotel businesses. Prior to taking office, Governor Walker and his wife Donna owned a law firm that focused on municipal and oil gas law. Married since 1977, the Walkers have 4 children and 4 grandchildren. Governor Walker is an avid downhill skier, enjoys fishing, boating, snow machining, campfires with the family at the lake, and taking the grandkids ice skating. Please welcome Governor Bill Walker.
Well, what an honor it is to tell my story. To set the story up, I have to talk a little bit about growing up in Valdez, the importance of basketball to a kid who wanted to get out of town. You did not get out of town unless you made the team. So you had to be on the team to get out of town. So it also involves Marty Rutherford. I don't know if anybody here knows Marty Rutherford, but she's the acting commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources. So life goes on in Valdez. There's no radio. There's no TV. There's no bowling alley. There's no theater. There's no... You've got basketball. That's all you got. So we won in... When I was a senior, we won a regional tournament, which meant that if we won the regional tournament, the playoff tournament was in Unalakleet. We had to travel to Unalakleet to play in the championship tournament. So we won the regionals in Kenai. We came back to Valdez excited about that. We went to the school board and said, we need some money to go on this trip. They said, no, we don't have any money. Go to the city council. So we went to the city council meeting. You know, I guess now they like celebrate when you win a tournament, and then in the 60s they didn't. We went in and we said, we need $700 to be able to fly to Unalakleet to play in the tournament. And I'll never forget this. He said, well, you should have thought of that before you won the regional tournament. Who does that anymore? But anyway, I remember that so well. So Marty and Marty was the head cheerleader. I was on the basketball team. So we went out and raised money. We got enough money to go to Unicleat to play in the tournament. Now, it was just us and Unicleat. We lost the tournament. Now, I don't actually know why I told that whole part of the story, because you don't tell a story, you usually lost. But anyway, that was just how important basketball was to us. So off we graduated from high school. Off we go to college. We come back after our first semester. And I tell you, there's no one smarter than a college student with one semester halfway through. It just doesn't get any better than that. So Marty and I came back to Valdez, and we got there before anybody else of any of our group that are our classmates. And there was a regional tournament in Delta Junction in like, it must have been like December 20th or so. So I said, hey, Marty, let's go to that tournament. It kind of like relive the old times, you know, as far as going up to Delta. And Delta, for those who know, is 256 miles north of Valdez. It was about 40 below in Delta. So we had to figure out how to borrow somebody's car. You know, in those days, I mean, there wasn't a matter of a two-car family. It was a big deal if it was a one-car family, much less a two-car. So getting a car was a little challenging. I asked my folks if I could borrow the only car they had, and they said, no, that won't be happening. She asked the same thing of her dad, and her dad said, John Kelsey, I don't know who John Kelsey is, but great guy. He said, no, but I'll drive you up there. I said, Marty, we're not going to have your dad drive us to Delta. I'm not going to do that. So we finally found a friend of ours whose folks would let him use the car. His car is the family station wagon, pretty old. His name is Willie Schmidt. He said, we can all drive up there. So we did, Willie Schmidt, Marty Rutherford, and myself. And as we're going along in this car, it was a station wagon. It was an early vintage station wagon. Things started not working so well as we got into the colder weather. You get past Glen Allen, you know, Paxson, you get up, it's a little bit colder. So we got to Delta, and we seemed to be losing parts of the transmission on the way. So we got to Delta, we went to the game, it was just great. It's like the old times, and knew a lot of the people were there. And we came out and started up the car, and it only had one gear left, and it was reverse. So we backed over to where we were staying at some friend's house, and Marty said, I need to call my dad, and he'll come get us. I said, no, Marty, don't call your dad. I don't want to listen to I Told You So for 256 miles from your dad. So I said, here's the plan. We're driving. We're going to go to Valdez tomorrow. We're going to drive. So the next morning, or about mid-morning, when it finally became daylight in Delta, it was 45 below, we backed out of Delta, heading down the Richardson Highway. And you could stick your head out the window for about 10 minutes and backing up. And then, so we would rotate. Each of us would drive for 10 minutes. We'd rotate around. And I thought, I think we're going to do this. I mean, we got some very strange looks from a lot of drivers on the highways. Like, what are these guys doing? Like, we can do this, Marty. We can do it. You know, I always like to challenge, and I sure have one now, but I've always liked to challenge. And so we make it about halfway to Paxson. And all of a sudden, we lost out all important gear, reverse. So we didn't have to pull over the side of the road, because that's where we were driving anyway. We just stopped, and man, now what are we going to do? And we'd never hitchhiked before. I mean, you grow up in Valdez, you just don't ever hitchhike. And so we got out, and it was the middle of the day, bright daylight. And so we just figured the next car that came by would stop. And so along came a car and just went right past us. But, huh. I said, well, one of us better get out. I said, Marty, you get out. You get out. She was the only girl. They'll stop for a girl. There's no problem. Next car came by and went right past us again. Like, what the heck is this? And so then we started hitchhiking and trying to get a ride to Paxson. And I'll never forget this. This car went by, and I'm getting out in the trap. I figure maybe if there's more people there, maybe they'll stop. So I get out there, and the car went by, and Marty was so livid. She was so angry. I'll never forget what she said. She just turned and screamed. I won't say exactly what she said. I'll paraphrase what she said. She just was standing in the middle of that road and just screamed out, and she said, hey, you better stop. We might be somebody someday. And I looked at her, and I said, why would you say that? Remember, we had already gone through one semester of college. So we were right up there. I said, why would you say that? She said, I don't know. It just seemed like something, the right thing to say. So anyway, we've been friends ever since, and now she's the acting commissioner of DNR, and we have a great time together. But and she hates it. She hates it when I tell that story. So I tell it as often as I can. Thank you.
This is Bird Note. In the American West, there are two species of phoebe that share the same expansive country. They're both flycatchers, but they rarely compete for food because they've evolved to occupy different habitats. The Say's phoebe's voice echoes off the rocks of almost any dry canyon west of the Rockies. A small brown flycatcher with an orange belly, the Say's phoebe is named for Thomas Say, an early 19th century explorer and naturalist. It prefers dry, open habitats ranging from tundra to desert, usually well away from trees or water. It's just as happy nesting among stone carvings in an Aztec ruin in central Mexico as it is on a cliff face north of the Arctic Circle. No other North American flycatcher ranges nearly so far north. The black phoebe is a close cousin to the Say's, but it's nearly always hunting by a body of water. You'll find it alongside creeks, reservoirs, or even the tiniest pond in a backyard or garden. Their voices set them apart, too. The brisk phrases of the black phoebe's song, standing in a sharp contrast to the plaintive refrain of the Say's phoebe, with which it shares the American West. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Hello there. It is 14 minutes past the hour. You're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. I am your Thursday talking head, Joan Pardis. And Megan Chambers from the Juno Arts and Humanities Council came on over to talk to us about what's going on
in
the capital city this weekend. It's great. So, Megan, what is going on?
Oh, you know, the usual. We're packed full of lots of cool events. This week and month through August is pretty special because we have the First Folio.
Let's talk about that. So people have been talking about this First Folio. So there is like an almost $400 year volume in our new museum.
There is. And it's traveling throughout the United States. I think it's hitting every state in the nation right now. And we're so lucky to have it all the way up north here.
That sounds great. So to celebrate that, what's going on?
Well, Theater in the Rough is working collaboratively with the APK group and the State Library Archives and Museum. And so they are reading every day around town, and they switch venues depending on what day of the week it is. So starting this week, we've got Henry VIII, and we've got Othello, we've got Troilus and Cressida, and The Taming of the Shrew.
And how would you find out where and when people,
you can
when
go on to Theater in the Rough's website, and we also have all of it listed on our community calendar. So the Jack's a pretty easy place to go to find out lots more about any of the events I'm going to talk about today.
That sounds great.
So all of these readings will go through August, which is wonderful. And they switch venues so that everybody gets a chance to go see all these different spots. And you can go see the volume itself at the State Museum downtown right near the Jack.
That sounds great. So that's for all the Shakespeare enthusiasts and beyond.
I'm sure there's
perfect,
quite a few out
yeah,
there.
The perfect time to become an enthusiast as well. So let me just take a quick peek here and see. So tonight is 12th night at 7 p.m. at the Valley Library, and tomorrow's King Lear,
correct,
7 p.m. at the APK building.
Yep.
Sounds great.
And every Monday, the Jack hosts, and we've been putting out the popcorn machine and sodas and some ice cream sandwiches, so we've made it kind of a movie theater atmosphere,
great,
which is fun.
That sounds great. And they're so wonderful.
They're
Theater in the Rough is
they're great.
Excellent, excellent
yep.
art organization.
Really, really good. Well, throughout the week, we've got a couple other fun events. On Friday, of course, is Rock Around the Block, one of our events, and we're all partnering with the Slam as well. It's looking pretty rainy, so my guess is that we'll be in the Rainy Day location instead of the Plaza. We will be in the Jack Main Hall, 90% sure, but you never know. It could turn a corner here.
Okay.
And we've got the Juno Contra group.
Oh, fun.
So if you're into dancing and need some people to call out some moves, then Friday night's the night for you. That'll be really fun.
That sounds fun.
And then there's also Juno Lyric Opera's 40th anniversary gala. So happy birthday, Juno Lyric Opera. They've got a really fun event planned. It's at Elizabeth Perachevich Hall. Let's see, lots of fun guests, special guests singing, complimentary tapas, and I think they've got some bar catering, and it's just going to be a blast.
And that's Friday
night. Lots of celebrations. Friday night at 7 p.m.
Sounds good.
We also have Perseverance Theater running their star program throughout the week with performances like Extreme Theater, Singing in the Rain, and Antigone. So check out jack.org or Perseverance Theater for the full program on those kids' shows. They're wonderful. I've seen some really great photos popping up on my Facebook.
I've seen a few. They're really, really great.
Yeah.
They're really fun.
Now, if you are along the Shakespeare vein, any Harry Potter fans out there should know that Saturday at midnight is the release of the new book by J.K. Rowling and some really good playwrights. It's a play, and it is called Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, and it comes out at midnight on Saturday, and Hearthside's hosting a big party. So there'll be trivia and Harry Potter-themed jewelry, and then at 12:01, you can get your book.
And that party starts at 9. You're supposed to go in the back entrance of the Nugget Mall.
Yep, exactly.
And then the trivia starts at 9:30,
mm-hmm.
and then just like all the other releases, you know, this was really big when they were coming out.
Yeah.
When they came out 10 years ago, or so on and so forth. So now the next generation could do that. And the play itself has been really getting rave reviews from like some serious
really
news outlets. Like the New York Times were just like ecstatic.
Oh, wonderful.
Which is
good.
Really, really fun.
Good.
And that's happening in London. So the play, but the book is being released, and it is, I think, indeed the play.
The book is a bound version of the play.
That sounds great. That sounds good. So that's Saturday night.
Saturday night starting at 9. Get your books at 12 a.m. 12:01, technically.
Mm-hmm. Don't make the publishers mad. There's nothing before 12:01.
Exactly. Then you guys chatted a little bit about the Juno Cabaret, I think, but that's at 7 p.m. on Sunday. And then the rest of the week slows down a little bit, but just like we were talking about before, lots of readings by Theater in the Rough, and Perseverance Theater's got those star program performances going on.
You know, Megan, with our patch of fall weather, a lot of us are starting to think about the fall reluctantly. What's going on with the Jack this fall? What kind of big events are...
We are gearing up for our season release party, so that'll happen mid to late August. I should know the date, but I can't pull it out of my head right now. But we'll have our annual party, and we invite all the members to be there. We usually have some music and some snacks, and we go through a quick agenda, and then we have our season passes available for sale and the season brochure, and kind of get excited about the next five events going through the fall, winter, and spring.
That sounds great. So you talked about members. How does one become a member of the Juno Arts and Humanities Council, and what is the importance of membership?
The Jack is a membership organization, which means that we don't just run on grant funding. We run on support from local Juno residents and businesses. And so it's really easy to become a member. You can call the Jack, 586-2787, and donate over the phone. You can write it down on one of our membership cards. You can go online and look. And it's really any amount of money that you want to donate, we will gladly accept, and that support goes directly to Jack programs, art scholarships, helping keep the Jack running, building maintenance, everything that kind of encompasses what we do at the Jack is funded by you guys. So similar to KTOO, nonprofits all work that way.
And is it an annual membership or is it?
It's an annual membership, yeah. So it starts the date you donate. It runs for a year, and members get 10% off in the lobby. They can get 20% off a season pass if you buy all the tickets at the same time. And you do get some other special perks like advanced tickets to Wearable Arts, which is
always a very hot
always
ticket.
A good thing.
Exactly. All right. Well, Megan, thank you so much for coming by today.
Thanks for having
and
me.
And letting us know what's going on. There's always something going on.
Never a dull moment.
Yeah, exactly. Largely in part of the Juno Arts and Humanities Council and all they do, and, of course, all the art organizations that they partner with.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks for coming by. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
What we most often hear is bad news about our teens. That alters what we know is true. Most Alaska teenagers are doing positive things. They're volunteers, role models, and much more. Spirit of Youth tells these stories.
She was winning. And so I don't know if you can grasp how significant that is.
That's Bruce Sheehan, an English teacher in Gambell, Alaska. He's talking about Lydia Passingock's success in the Alaska State Battle of the Books this school year. A Passingucks team from a small school on St. Lawrence Island in the Bering Sea tied for third place with the Big City team from Anchorage.
And Lydia really is the linchpin of that team. It was her and two freshmen.
A Passingucks is known for her work with other students. If she has extra time in class, she'll see what she can do to help.
I just help them with their work and try to, like, help them get the answer on their own.
She says there aren't enough teachers who are from the island. Her goal is to get through college as soon as possible so she can come back to Gambell as an English teacher.
She wants to do that before her youngest brother is in high school, and he currently is in fifth grade.
That's Gambell school counselor Kristen Rausch, who's been working with the Passingock as she makes plans to graduate early. A Passingock wants to spark student interest in activities that she's been drawn to throughout high school.
They're finally going to be in high school. And, like, I want to see them doing really well in school. Stuff like Battle of the Books, journalism, spelling bee, all those future activities.
Just about to graduate, she knows she has something valuable to say to the younger residents of Gambell. I'm Rosie Robards.
Do you know of a teenager making a difference where you live? Take some time right now to nominate them for Spirit of Youth. Get more information at spiritofyouth.org.
Thank you for joining Jeff and I at the Juno Afternoon on KTOO tonight. Going to go right into the weather here. So tonight, numerous rain showers in the evening, then rain showers after midnight. Lows in the mid-50s, southeast winds to 10 miles per hour in the Mendenhall Valley. We're looking at low around 50. Tomorrow, rain showers. Tomorrow night, patchy fog, numerous rain showers. And then we're looking at cloudy, patchy fog on Saturday. Right now, it is 53 downtown and at the airport, 51 in the valley, and 54, nice balmy 54 in Douglas. So tomorrow, turn in to Juno Afternoon. Tune in to Juno Afternoon. Jeff Brady and Dave Saxton from Skagway will be here to talk about the second edition of the Skagway Police Blotter. That's a book. And then Brenda Weaver from Hearthside will be here with all the details about that release party for the Harry Potter book, the new Harry Potter book at Hearthside. All right, thanks for sharing your day with us. Have a great one.